involved in. And the 119th Psalm tells us what this is all about, what the Lord has provided for us. If you're not familiar with the 119th Psalm, I'd encourage you to take your sessions and read it, because it deals with the benefits and the power of the law, what it did and what it will do in life. The 119th Psalm, verse 9, it starts with, "Wherewith shall a young man cleanse his way?" This matter, whether you're young or old, that we have a cleansing, but as the psalmist identifies, he's going to set forth of what it takes in order to have a clean life, in order what to do. God has provided that for us in regards to our lives. He said, "By taking heed thereto, according to thy word, with my whole heart have I sought thee. Oh, let me not wander from thy commandments. Thy word have I laid up in my heart, that I might not sin against thee. Blessed art thou, O Jehovah. Teach me thy statutes. With my lips have I declared all the ordinances of thy mouth. I have rejoiced in the way of thy testimonies, as much as in all riches. I will meditate on thy precepts and have respect unto thy ways. I will delight myself in thy statutes. I will not forget thy word." Those are the principles of which the psalmist identifies, and especially verse 11, when he said, "Thy word have I laid up in my heart, that I might not sin against thee." In order to not sin against our God, we need to have His word laid up in our life, that it is always there, that it's ready in order to help direct us and help us to understand the things of this life and that which is to come. We find in the writing of 1 John, in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15, we're going to consider the matter of the sacrifices that we make in life, that each and every one of us are required to, as children of God, in these sacrifices. And what we find in John chapter 2 and verse 15 identifies the world within which we live, of which we have to deal. He stated in verse 15, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the vainglory of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever." We have two contrasts here as far as the world is concerned, that it is one that is going to pass away, that our life upon this earth is temporary. We know that. We understand that. We see that every day of individuals that are born into this world and those that pass from this world. And so the Lord identifies when He wants us to get a focus upon our life in that which we should give attention to. In James chapter 4 and verse 4, we find that He identifies basically that friendship of the world is enmity with God. We cannot make friends with the world, although we live in the world. And so we need to keep our focus upon that of which we are involved. So we're going to look, Lord willing, throughout this, of sacrificing the eternal on the altar of the immediate. What we're going to do, as the psalmist had identified, as 1 John 2 identifies, that the world passes away, but that which is before God is going to be eternal. And so we're going to consider some matters in regard to this evening. We find that there's a danger that we have in life of becoming a part of society. We live in the society, we work in the society, we deal with people, worldly people, in the society, and it has a tendency to draw us in that way. And they will try to draw us according to the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the vainglory of life. We live in a society that is interested in the gratification of the flesh. Whatever we want, whatever we desire, it's something that individuals say, well, you ought to go for it. Whatever you want, you only live once, and therefore you do whatever it is you want to do. Actually, Solomon told the young men to do that, the young ones, that you seek your heart's desire. You do it, but you remember that you're going to be brought into judgment in reference to that. And so we find that as we consider these matters, that there's a danger of us being a part of society. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, the Lord had indicated of this physical sacrifice, even the spiritual sacrifice, that's going to be manifested in our bodies. It'll have a physical manifestation to it, but it is a spiritual sacrifice. He said, "Be not fashioned according to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God." And so we said, don't be fashioned according, and that to have a form and to be molded by the world. There's many people that are molded by the world, and unfortunately it's getting to the point that there's many people in the body of Christ that are being molded by the world. And so we need to understand that in regard to this, there's a danger of us being a product of the society within which we live. In the writing of 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11, where the Apostle Peter identifies this point when he states in regard to it that we are to abstain from fleshly lust, that we have that which will draw away from the responsibilities that we have, that will seek for the gratification of the flesh. And that's what we have, whether it be in the sensual sense or whether it be in regard to that of drugs. It's one that will attack the very nerves, and people get a gratification out of it. There's drugs out there, from what I understand, that once they take it, they're hooked forever. It opens up every fiber of their nerves. And in order to fulfill that, they will not only do it again, but they'll have to increase it as their body gets into it. It destroys their life. And it is one that has the fleshly lust. And that's what Peter said, that you abstain from it. In 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 22, that we are to abstain from every form of evil. Every form that evil takes, we are to abstain from that. And that goes back to the statements that were made within the writing of the Hebrew letter, in that of developing our senses, that we are able to discern between good and evil. We also find in the writing of the Kings, in 1 Kings chapter 18, that Elijah was doing battle on Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal. And it had rained for 3.5 years. He challenges the prophets of Baal, and they come in and they offer their sacrifices. The prophets of Baal, they're jumping around and they're cutting themselves and they're calling on their gods, while Elijah himself is mocking them in some fashion. And we find that when Elijah identifies with the children of Israel, he asks them this question: how long go ye living between the two sides? We find that individuals, sometimes we're all individuals, but we have to be careful that we're not trying to live in both areas. And Elijah identifies that point. You cannot, in your life, limp between the two sides. It will be one or the other. And it's as it was with the church in Revelation that identified that they were neither hot nor cold. And because they were lukewarm, they had not made that choice. They had not made that decision, if you will. And as a result of it, the Lord said he would spew them out of his mouth. And so here's this matter of living between the two sides. I like this over here, and I don't like this. I have yet to find somebody that did not find something in the Scriptures that wished it wasn't there. Now, maybe you've been there. But I've yet to find. If you have, be sure to talk to me. Because there are things within the Scriptures that make it difficult, that it will separate families. It will make it difficult within our lives when we're dealing with other people. You say, you know, I don't apologize for it being there, but you wish that it wasn't, but it is. And because it is, and we have this opportunity to be obedient to our God, and that he will be the author of eternal salvation to all them that obey him. The Lord indicated that in regard, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. And we are to do that joyfully, not as Israel did, that when they would complain because of what they had to do, and then they called it a burden. What is it that God is, what do we have to do today? And the Lord said, you don't use that term of burden. You don't use that. Because if you do, I will not hold you guiltless in regard to it. Rather, What has the Lord said? And that's the attitude by which we are to approach the Word of God. Not apologizing for it. We just understand that it's there and it's there for our good always. And when we understand that, then we can take it joyfully and know that it brings glory to our God. And so when Elijah says, "How long go ye limping between the two sides?" they stood up and they said, nothing. They did not respond to him at all because they knew that he had nailed them right on the spot. Joshua, we're all familiar with the statement of Joshua was, "You choose this day who you're going to serve, whether it be that of the gods that are beyond the river," and that would have gone back all the way to Abraham and his father. "Or you're going to do that of the Amorites," he said, "but as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." But he said, "You choose today. Today, you choose who you're going to serve." And so we find that we have a danger of becoming a product of the society within which we live. We find that the condition of society and the church have a tendency sometimes to overlap, if you will. We know from the writing of Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20, this depicts, it's just so amazing, of how the scriptures that we could read it, and it's just like we're putting it right into our newspapers today. It's just like we're putting it into our lives today, because we see these matters continue to be exercised. In Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20, he said, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness and bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." Have you ever heard that where you have something and that it is evil, and that when you stand up against it, that people will attack you? They say, "No, it's good. It's legal. It's good. And we can do that." And so they call evil good. And when you oppose that which is evil, they call that good evil. And that's what we have going on in our society. And that comes up within the church, if you will, on occasion, of where even brethren have called evil good and good evil. Basically, in a matter of just let it go. Just let it go. Don't worry about it. Everything will be fine. And we find that when error is let go, all it will do is run amok and it won't get better. And so we find that we have to be careful about that. Within the writing of Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 2, this matter of justifying the evil that goes on within life, Proverbs 16 verse 2, he said, "All the ways of man are clean in his own eyes, but Jehovah weigheth the spirit." That the things that are clean, man does not like to be wrong. We still like it. We don't want folks to think we're wrong. So what we will do before we do something is we'll justify it. So I'm going to justify it, therefore I can do it. You can't do it, but I can do it because of my circumstance or whatever the case may be. And so that my ways are clean before my eyes, but God weighs the spirit. And he knows why we do what we do. Courage in individuals. You want to know why people do what they do? You become familiar with the book of Proverbs, because that's what he does. He strips away excuses. And when he strips away excuses, he'll tell you this is why you're doing what you're doing. You might have all the reasons in the world that it may well just be your lawnmower's broke, because they make about as much sense in regard to that. But Proverbs will strip all of that away and tell you why men do what they do. And so we find that if I'm going to be clean, well, I don't see anything wrong with it. Or it seems to me, you probably heard that phrase. And when you hear it, even among the body of Christ, well, I just don't see what's wrong with it. Rather than asking what's right with it. Being able to discern good and evil in regard to that. In Proverbs 17, verse 15, and here's what we have even within society, especially within society, when he said, "He that justifieth the wicked, and he that condemneth the righteous, both of them alike are an abomination to Jehovah." We have two things, those that justify the wicked, and he that condemneth the righteous. They will justify what the wicked do, and they do, in essence, condemn the righteous when they speak up against it. We know from the writing of the Roman letter, the Apostle Paul dealt with that when he was dealing with the sins of the Gentiles, when he said that concerning these transgressions, that they were involved in, who knowing the ordinance of God, that they that practice such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but also consent with them that practice them. And they are as guilty for consenting as they are for doing. And we find that in regard to that, the condition of the church can be affected by society unless we take a stand that we're not going to call good evil, and we're not going to call evil good, because the world will try to get you to do that very thing. And so we need to be mindful of that. Now, the latter end of error is what we need to consider. You recall that this individual, known as Esau, referred to in the writing of Genesis, in Genesis chapter 25. We know the story of Jacob and Esau, of how Esau had come in from his hunting. He had not been able to secure anything to eat, and so he makes this league, if you will, with Jacob. Jacob, actually, I believe, is supplanter. That's what is yours is going to become mine. He did that with Esau. He did that with Laban, that what they had became his. And here's a case of where Jacob said, yes, I'll give you this food to eat if you'll sell me your birthright. We know that story. And we find that throughout the process of what took place in Genesis chapter 25, that in chapter 27 of that writing, that we have the end result of that error, or at least part of that end result. Because Esau now comes to his father. And in verse 38, we find of chapter 27, not 38, yeah. 38, chapter 27, we find, and Esau said unto his father, hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And wept. Now Isaac had already given the blessing. Now Esau actually ended up with most of the property and everything. So it's not this physical inheritance that's involved. He lifted up his voice and he wept. And that was of such a significance that we find this statement, this story, this actual event that was stated within the writing of the Hebrew letter, that is a warning to us in regards to our conduct, when he said in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 14, he said, follow after peace with all men in sanctification, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking carefully lest there be any man that falleth short of the grace of God. Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for the mess of meat sold his own birthright. For we know that even when he afterward desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for a change of mind in his father, though he sought it diligently with tears. And that goes to us. There's a lesson for us to learn in regards to the latter end of error. Where's it going to lead? What's going to lead to? What's going to happen in regard to error when it is followed? And so we find in Luke chapter 13 and verse 22, words that should exhort us, they should admonish us and get our attention, if you will. Luke chapter 13 and verse 22, of whence the Lord identifies and said, he went on his way through cities and villages, teaching and journeying on to Jerusalem. And one said unto him, Lord, are they few that are saved? And he said unto them, strive to enter in by the narrow door. For many, I say unto you, shall seek to enter in and shall not be able. When once the master of the house is risen up and has shut the door, and ye began to stand without and to knock at the door, saying, Lord, open to us. And he shall answer and say to you, I know you not whence ye are. Then shall ye begin to say, we did eat and drink in thy presence, and thou didst teach in our streets. And he shall say, I tell you, I know not whence ye are. Depart from me, all ye workers of iniquity. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth when ye shall see Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the prophets in the kingdom of God and yourselves cast forth without. Let us not be that guy. Let us not be that one that we appeal to the Lord, but yet we will not be allowed to enter in because of iniquity. These messages are given to us that we will be able to frame our life not according to the world. Be not fashioned according to the world, but let it be transformed by the renewing of our mind. And that's what the Lord would have us to do. The latter end of error is what we want to avoid. We find that the Lord would have us to break this cycle of evil within our life. We have men like Josiah. Josiah had his grandfather, Manasseh. He's the one, the reason why Judah was actually taken into captivity. Caused his sons to pass through the fire unto Moloch. He worshipped all of his idols. And you know what's interesting about that? I want you to think about it. That when he humbled himself, his kingdom was removed from him. And when he humbled himself before God, God heard him. Two of the most wicked men, kings, Ahab and Manasseh, both of them, when they finally humbled themselves before their God, he heard them. And the events that transpired didn't transpire in their life, but it came in the others. But Josiah was one, as we know, a young man, that he began to reign as king. They found the writing of the law. They found the book in the temple. They brought it to him. They read it. He found out that there was a condemnation that rested on Judah as a result of it. He repented of that, and the Lord spared them in regard to it. And it came, but not in his lifetime. But he broke the cycle of evil within his life by destroying the idols out of Judah. Well, we find in Isaiah chapter 1, verse 16, that the Lord would have us to do the very same thing and to break the cycle of evil that comes about within our life. Wash ye, make ye clean, put away the evil of your doings from before mine eyes, cease to do evil, learn to do well, seek justice, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widows. We find this statement. You think about what Paul said about his physical condition, that he said that I know what it is to abound. I know what it is to base. But one thing he said, I learned how to be content in whatever state I'm in. These are learned traits. And here is a learned trait of that, of ceasing to do evil and learning to do good. And we need to break that cycle within our life. We find that when sin becomes the norm within life of how it will affect an individual. In the writings of Jeremiah, in Jeremiah chapter 13, as Jeremiah, he had 20 years with Josiah. And he had a good 20 years that where Josiah was working on the physical reform, Jeremiah is working on the spiritual reform. And then after Josiah, he ultimately gets Jehoiakim. And we find that his last 20 years was tough. He had a hard 20 years, the last part of it. But we find, so he's preaching to Judah. And he's trying to get Judah to see the condition that they're in. And in Jeremiah chapter 13, here's what the Lord said to him through Jeremiah. Lift up your eyes and behold them that come from the north, where the flock that was given thee, thy beautiful flock. What wilt thou say when he shall set over thee as head those whom thou hast thyself taught to be thy friends to thee? That's Babylon, okay, the north. That you have taught them to be your friends, and now they're going to be over you. How are you going to feel about that when that happens? If you took a nation today, you took Russia, and you make friends of Russia. Russia becomes your friend, and then before you know it, Russia's going to be the head over you. That's kind of the analogy of what we have here. Well, we find that Judah, they wanted what Babylon had, the pomp and all their glory and everything they had, and they wanted to be a part of that. And so they made friends with it. And now Babylon's going to be over them. and what's going to happen, as he says, and whose head, those whom thou hast thyself taught to be friends to thee, shall not sorrow take hold of thee as a woman in travail. And if thou say in thy heart, wherefore are these things come upon me? And that's what happened. Why did this happen? How many times have you heard people do that? They're suffering from their sin, and they come and they say, how do you fix it? You cannot fix sin. Once that seed has been planted, it will produce something. Now, we can be forgiven for it, but sin will bear its fruit. And what they identify here in regard to this, that you say in your heart, wherefore are these things come upon us? For the greatness of thine iniquity are thy skirts uncovered, and thy heels suffer violence. Now here's what he said to them. Can the Ethiopian change his skin, or the leopard his spots? Then, if that happens, then may ye also do good and are... that are accustomed to do evil. That's what sin does. When it gets a hold of you, the leopard changes spots, the Ethiopian, the color of his skin, and if that happens, then you'll be able to you'll be able to get past what you're accustomed to do with evil. Point is, you can't. And he identifies, therefore will I scatter them as the stubble that passeth away, but by the wind of the wilderness. This is thy lot, the portion measured unto thee from me, saith Jehovah, because thou hast forgotten me and trusted in falsehood. And so the Lord identifies that iniquity when it overtakes you. It's not a switch. I don't know how many I've heard individuals say that. You like this. When I get older, if I don't have anything else to do, then I'll serve the Lord. Like my father once said, he didn't know how he had time to work. After he retired, what was required of him. We'll never get to a point where we don't have something to do. And people that the young, that they think that this is like a light switch, that I can live like I want to live now, and then I'll flip that switch at an appropriate time and I'll serve the Lord. I know some that have attempted to do that. And they're more like Judah was in regard to changing the spots on the leopard. Or the skin of the Ethiopian, and they don't know. They don't know. Because you're developing the character. And once our character is developed, it is very difficult, if not nigh unto impossible, to change that. And that's what we need to understand. There was an event that took place at Baal Peor. You understand? Balaam, when the children of Israel were going into the land, that Balaam had gone in, tried to curse the children of Israel, wasn't able to do so, and Balak, the king, was angry with him. He had offered him all sorts of great riches and wealth. But what Balaam did, since he could not curse them, what he told Balak to do was to get Israel to take their wives, take the women of Moab, and God would take care of them. And that's what happened. What I found interesting, here was a statement that was made by Josephus. Now I understand that this is not the gospel. This is not the word, but the words that he uses to describe this, of the antiquities of the Jews, that Josephus wrote. He said, do you therefore, that's what Balak, what Balaam told Balak, do you therefore set out the handsome of such of your daughters as are most eminent and beauty and proper to force and conquer the modesty, to conquer the modesty of those that behold them. You conquer their modesty. And according to Josephus, what they did was after they conquered their modesty, they said, we can't have anything to do with you. And these men were so enamored with them, they said, what must we do to keep you from going home? And they said, serve our gods. And that's what they did. But that phrase, to conquer the modesty, that's what sin does. Sin will conquer our modesty. We find that the road to salvation is a choice. It's true that the Scriptures say that God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son, and He did that for our salvation. But it also identifies that it requires action on our part. In the writing of Matthew, in Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28, when the Lord said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls." The Lord said, "Come." That's what He said. "You come unto me." The Lord didn't chase them, force them. He said, "You want this, you come unto me." In the writing of the Colossian letter, in Colossians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul indicated, he's talking to brethren, and that's, these epistles were written to brethren, so when we look at it from that standpoint, we can learn a great deal. But what he said in Colossians 3 and verse 1, when he said, "If then you were raised together with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things that are above, not on the things that are upon the earth, for ye died, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall be manifested, then shall ye also with Him be manifested in glory." We sang all of these songs about how beautiful heaven's going to be, and Paul said you have to set your mind on the things that are above, not on the things that are upon this earth. It goes back to John chapter 2 in reference to that of the world will pass away, but our life of what we're looking for is eternal in its nature. And in order to do that, to focus upon the things that are above, Paul said in verse 5, "Put to death, therefore, your members which are upon the earth." And he identifies what they are. All the lusts of the flesh, of which the Lord said will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. And we have to take that. When you have a bad habit, so to speak, and you get rid of that bad habit, you have to replace it with something, or you'll go back to it. You take that evil and put it away, and you adopt that which is good. And therefore, Paul said in verse 12, "Put on, therefore, as God's elect, holy and beloved, a heart of compassion, kindness, lowliness, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another and forgiving each other." But that's what he identifies that we should be. It's true. The road to salvation is a choice. You will learn to do good or you will learn to do evil. That's the options that we have in life. And we find that when we learn to do good, that we can lay hold of this promise of which the Apostle Peter had identified in 2 Peter chapter 1 when he said in verse 2, "Grace to you and peace be multiplied in the knowledge of God and of Jesus our Lord. See that His divine power hath granted unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of Him that called us by His own glory and virtue, whereby He hath granted us His precious and exceeding great promises, that through these ye may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped from the corruption that is in the world by lust." That's a promise that we have, and that's what God has given to us. And when we lay hold on that and we seek that which is above and not that which is upon the earth, we turn away from that, the characteristics of the flesh that will draw us away, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the vainglory of life. All three of those is what Satan used against Eve. She found it was good for food. This would be good for food. The delight to look at. And it will make me wise. That's what that is. And that is so successful. That's all Satan needs. He doesn't have to come up with all sorts of devices. That is what is successful for him. And we are not unmindful of his devices. And so we understand that though the road to salvation is a choice, it's going to require that we take action. So the question is, what choices are you making? 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 6, we find that the Apostle Paul, within his life, that he had reference to his life is coming to a close. He is about to be offered up as a sacrifice, if you will. Two passages along that line. He said in verse 6, "For I'm already being offered, and the time of my departure is come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith." That's what we want to be able to say when our life comes to an end. Henceforth, this promise, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me at that day, and not to me only, but also to all them that have loved His appearing. That's the promise that we have. And that's what we can lay hold on. If we make the right choices in life. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 17, we find where Paul, he understood of his life of being one of sacrifice when he stated that, yea, and if I am offered upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all. What he did, if that sacrifice is there. We're looking in regard to this matter of sacrificing, of whether or not we're sacrificing the eternal on the altar of the immediate. The immediate is the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the vainglory of life. Are you willing to make a choice of coming to Christ? That's the bottom line. Are you make a choice to do that, or are you going to sacrifice the eternal on the altar of the immediate and be forever separated from your God? That's your choice. That's what the Lord tells us. If you're here tonight and you've not been obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ, understand what's before you. Being separated from God, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for the ungodly. That's us. When we did not allow God to rule in our life. But He gives us a hope. He gives us a choice. I'll give you my Son and His blood. Through it, we can have the remission of sins, but it's going to require that we're obedient to Him. And if you have not done that, made that decision, and you have a desire to know more of how to do that, we invite you to let us know as together we stand, and as we sing, and the elders will be happy to assist you in your obedience.